Welcome to the Mental Coaching Podcast, sponsored by the National High School Basketball Coaches Association. I'm your host, Jenny Hopkins, and I am so excited about our guest this week. You better put your seatbelt on because this guy knows how to motivate people. He knows how to inspire. He has this internal drive and this energy that is contagious. So we're going to get right to our guest. We are going to visit today with Coach Sundance Wicks. And if you don't know him, you do that. He's very energetic. He's a Wyoming native, and right now he is the assistant coach at the University of Wyoming. And he has been a lot of different places and has done so many things that have improved the game of basketball. He's from Campbell County High School in Wyoming. He played football, basketball, track and field. He has always been a part of the athletic world. He began his collegiate coaching as a graduate assistant at Northern State under the legendary Don Meyer. He also developed and built the Arizona Power Basketball Academy. He has been an assistant coach at Division II and Division I levels, and he was the head coach at Missouri Western for 2 years. He has traveled around and spoke at different clinics, and he always provides a high energy presentation. Currently the assistant coach at the University of Wyoming. You're going to enjoy this conversation, I can guarantee it, Coach Sundance Wicks. And when we are finished with him, we will have your technique of the month. All right, I want to welcome Coach Sundance Wicks to the show, and I'm so excited to have you here. You know, we're bringing awareness to mental coaching and assisting coaches and athletes to better meet, their hypothetical best, you know, to meet their potential. And I know that, first of all, you're in the heart of your season, so I appreciate this time more than you'll ever know, because I know it's precious, few and far between, to get moments like this. So thank you for your time.
Jenny, I'm pumped to be here. Look, this is actually couldn't have come at a better time too, because in the heart of our season, and our season hasn't been great by any means. So there'll be a lot of parallels I'll be able to draw through this conversation today, just simply from going through it with our guys and been off the heels of an NCAA tournament season last year. And now to a season where it's basically flipped a complete opposite way, and having coached, you know, in college now for 15, 16 plus years, if you coach long enough, you're going to experience every type of season.
Isn't that the truth?
It's also changed from when I was doing this in 2004 to now, almost 20 years later. Like, the dynamic of the kid, the dynamic of the NCAA, the dynamic of the coaches, the whole platform has changed. So,
well, let's dive into that. Just going with just some of the changes that have happened to the game. We're bringing, you know, some light and generating kind of a conversation on the mental health of athletes. But we refer to it more as mental coaching, because I feel like when you say mental coaching, you're doing something about it. and we're helping these athletes and these coaches kind of navigate that. What are your general thoughts about the change in mental health with athletes?
Well, if you look at, like, just general health, right? Let's just talk about health in general. Most of us are terrible with our health in general. Yeah. So, like, I know I'm going to eat fast food way more than I probably should. And I know what's good for me. I know what I should eat. I know what I should put in my body, the type of fuel I should have in my tank. Oh, crap. I knew better as an athlete too. Mm-hmm. And that's just the physical side of me, like what I'm doing to my body, just how I'm taking care of it. And so we're nowhere near as healthy as we should be physically. And we know we pay way more attention to our physical body, our physical appearance, and how we feel way more than we pay attention to how we're thinking and how we're processing and how we're coping things that are going on in our life. And so as much as the landscape has changed, it is still so far behind. I mean, light years behind in what we can do for the mental side of the game, for the mental side of the player, for the mental side of performance, psychological skills training. If I just go back to 2004, I mean, it's something as simple as, okay, you're sick. A Sundance, you know, you're sick. You don't feel great today. What would your coach say to you, right? So this was your player. You're getting up in the morning and you know you're sick. You got sore throat or whatever. And you feel like crap. Maybe you're puking. Who knows? You got a game the next day and you say, what would your coach say? They'd say, suck it up. We need you to play. What about Jordan? Jordan's flu game. You sit there and reference Jordan's flu game. You go, maybe I'll have a game. Maybe I'll have the game like Jordan had when he had the flu, because he played through the flu, so I can do that as well. Right. And I know my coach would say, suck it up. Let's go. We need you, big dog. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the end of it, right? You don't sit there and think about, like, what how do I really feel? You don't really care. You just think about, I got to go play and I got to go perform. I got to try to be at my best. So whatever I can do, I'm going to do it. Well, fast forward 20 years. The one simple change now is what athletes are asking themselves. They aren't asking themselves what my coach say. They're saying, what's right in this situation? If I don't feel great, if I don't feel good, if I feel sick, if I'm been puking, if I feel dehydrated, they have all this information and resources available to them, and I don't feel a certain way. I know that sucking it up, I could do it, but is it the right thing to do? And they have to ask that question. So you as a coach now have to flip the script from saying suck it up to how are you feeling?
Right.
Do you feel like you could do this tonight? Do you feel like you could practice today? Do you feel like you could play today? How do you feel? Not how do I want you to feel? And that has been, that's just a huge paradigm shift from, I mean, that's 20 years to now is suck it up versus how do you feel?
Right.
And I think, you know, we don't ask that question enough to players. And sometimes it's like, well, maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't. It's still college athletics and it's still competitive. But at the end of the day, like we're all human beings, right? And we talked about this before we got on, is there more and more players, athletes, people with pulpits are getting in position to talk about what their struggles have been. And they're having more voices, which those voices now are being heard. And so what that's doing is that's helping other young men, women in athletics or any profession for that matter, help them process and analyze what they're going through. And maybe some, and we don't know, like I said, there's a lot of self-diagnosing going on mm-hmm. out there today. There's
yes.
a lot of people that will sit there and look WebMD themselves and say, I have this, or I have this, I have anxiety or I have depression, but they haven't seen anybody. And so it's not up for the kid to decide that it's, let's go speak to someone like yourself. Let's go speak to a professional. Let's go see what, let's go unpack some stuff. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of unpacking that needs to happen nowadays. A lot of student athletes, a lot of athletes in general. So
that's so true. And, you know, we've seen an elevated fear of failure and performance anxiety. Perfectionism is probably one of the most common things. Inconsistent confidence, even success guilt, not feeling like they deserve to have success. There's so many different things that are kind of bouncing around right now for athletes. And I think you hit it on something that is really interesting, the self-diagnosing, where they're hearing about somebody that went through this situation. And I may have traits of that. I may have some performance anxiety. How do we get to the point where you go, now, do you really, or to go to the, well, then let's explore that and get you some help and show them what a strength it is to be able to be aware of how they're feeling and what direction we can take it.
I think that's a great question. The first conversation I would have with a young man that would come into our office and say, Coach, I'm really struggling. I think I have performance anxiety. I'm really struggling on the floor. Talk about the fear of failure stuff. The first question I would ask him is, how's your training going? Do you trust your work? How do you feel skill-wise? Do you feel competent in your area of expertise? Like if you're a shooter and you're a sniper and you're a knockdown guy, have you been doing the requisite work to feel, because we all know that confidence, real true confidence, comes from demonstrated ability. Can I demonstrate that I'm good enough at what I do? But to do that, you have to put in the requisite work over and over and over again and stack days. And it just doesn't happen overnight. And I think part of the problem is that we think that success can happen overnight. It's a microwave society. We look for things instantly, right? We want immediate gratification. Knowing that if we really break it down to its fundamental level, it's the work. So 10,000 hours to mastery. How close are we? And is that work translatable? Are we doing the things that we should be doing for who we are as a player or person? And so that's the first question I'd ask is like, what's your workload been like lately? How have you been in the gym? How many times have you, like, how many shots have you made? What's your routine? What are you going through? Let's talk this out. And now let's see if we have any faith or confidence or trust in what we're doing in our work. And if we know that we're going in, we're doing the work, right? Because that's the number one part of accountability is one, showing up, two, doing the work. And so if we're showing up every day and we're doing the work, but yet we're still struggling for some whatever reason by the time we get to a game, then for me, since I'm not licensed, I'm going to send you to our sports psychologist. I'm going to send you to somebody that maybe can help you unpack some things that may be going on up there. Because as easy as it is to diagnose a physical ailment, I sprained my ankle. Mm-hmm. I got a sore wrist, right? I'm sore from lifting. I can feel those things. It's like, we don't know what that's like up here. We have no idea. It's like
we can hide a lot of things up there.
Oh man, and I tell you, there's a lot hidden up in this bad boy up here. I can tell you that much. But, you just get so good at saying, it can't be that. Like, it's got to be something. It's got to be my shot. Like, it's got something's got to be wrong. My elbow's out. It's got to be something else.
So what do you do? I think I know the answer to this. You know, you have someone that does come into your office and they say, I'm struggling and I need some help. You know, I'm feeling this way or I'm feeling that way. Do you see that as a strength or a weakness?
Well, I believe I live by the thing. You got to this code. It's, do you have it? I think great leaders have it, and it's an acronym of have and it. And I think great leaders and great coaches, and this is a personal philosophy of mine, but I've seen it in high level leaders and high level coaches and high level, you know, leaders of teams and organizations, is they have humility. Number one, they have awareness. Number two, self-awareness, right? I know who I am, but more importantly, I know who I am not. And then three, they have vulnerability. I think great leaders are vulnerable, and they don't just share everything. They don't just spew it out, but they're vulnerable with what they've gone through and the ups and downs, trials and tribulations. They share freely, because that is how we learn, knowledge from others. Hopefully we don't have to experience all ourselves. We can learn something from somebody else.
That's a sign of coachability.
Coachability is vulnerability, right? Like, and then empathy. Mm-hmm. I think the have side of that is humility, awareness, mostly self-awareness, vulnerability, and empathy, right? We have to be able to empathize I was once a player. I know what you're going through. I'm 20 years removed now. But there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about my playing careers and the impact that my coach had. I mean, the things that he said, or any coach that I had for that matter growing up, what they said to me, because there's something that rings true. And so I think when someone can approach you and tell you something vulnerable, right, to me, that is a sign of massive strength, because they've got to a point where they can now give something that they've been holding on to somebody else. And if somebody gives you that, you have to take that with great care and handle that with great expectations, understanding that somebody just gave you that moment, gave you that vulnerability. And to me, that's what's real friendship is. That's true mentorship and leadership, is really being able to be vulnerable with one another. And then the last part of it is it, right? Do they have it, which is to me, intelligence and toughness. Mm-hmm. And it's the intelligence side of it that allows you to be tough physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and socially. You can understand what to do with what you just got.
Right.
So what you gave me, I gotta be intelligent enough to know what to do with that. And sometimes that's not me, that's you. I gotta give that to you. I gotta give that to sports psychologist Chris, or Katie, who used to work with us. I gotta go give that to somebody else.
Well, number one, I love that. I love the habit. I want you to come up with one for want it.
We can do that. I love acronyms. If anybody knows me, knows I pretty much speak in code all the time. So
I love it. I love it. But I mean, being able to have those qualities and those characteristics that you're describing, I mean, those are foundational. Those are foundational qualities that can really help athletes through that time and help them kind of navigate rough patches and be able to arm them with the skills that you're talking about to be able to cope. Tell me a little bit about another avenue that you take. When you spoke at the Missouri Basketball Coaches Association Clinic a few years ago, and that's where we met. I love it. We have one of the best clinics, I have to say, but I will tell you this, you were magnetic. You have a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm, and you even gave out some shirts, and you gave me a shirt to give to my son. He wears it all the time. And make sure that I get this right. It says, bring your own juice.
BYOJ.
Yeah. And it was, it's something that just has such so many different motivating meanings, but tell me what it means to you.
Man, one, my college coach, I love him to death. I was actually writing notes down today just of stuff that I have 20 years of notebooks. He taught me to be a lifelong learner. I always want to learn. And one of the notes and quotes I wrote down today was, send a message with a t-shirt. He was the king of tea. He made so many t-shirts, t-shirts, team t-shirts. We had different things on them. I always said that, send a message with a t-shirt and a meaningful one, something that's important to you. And before I go into the bring your own juice, I want to digress a little bit just to the idea of the habit, because I think it's, as much as there's a stigma on mental health, there's also a stigma for coaches, right? Like they're not vulnerable. right? We're not
vulnerable. No, they're terrible. They're terrible.
Try to act like, and we'll hit on that later too. We try to act like we got it all figured out, but yeah. It's, you know, there's a sports psychologist for the student athletes on campus, but what about the sports psychologist for the coaches?
Amen. I mean,
you talk about the student athlete has a couple of things, right? They have the student experience, they have the athlete experience, they have the social experience. Mm-hmm. But the coaches have family, media, friends, finances, right? All these little structures that when you're grown, right? You grow up, so you got grown consequences for growing up. You know, when you start making grown decisions, you start having families, you know, you got kids and mouths to feed and all these things. You it's part of life. But it also, that doesn't mean it makes it any easier for the coaches. Just because you're older doesn't mean you're more equipped, so to speak, to handle some of the situations you go through.
Right.
So it's I wish we could get to the point too where it was just more acceptable for coaches to be able to be open and honest and vulnerable without it being held against them as saying like, well, maybe they're not fit to run a program or maybe they're not capable of leading young men. When in reality is if they were more open, if we were all more open and honest about how we felt in certain situations without having to mask it, right? We probably wouldn't have some of the situations that happen in coaching.
Yeah.
We'd be able to be looked at as strong leaders because that's what it is, right? Like, yeah. To be a strong man of faith, you have to drop to your knees, mm-hmm. and you have to be humble enough to thank God and for all the blessings and all the things, good or bad, that happen in life. So if that's strength and faith, why is it looked the opposite way? If you know, we're just, you know, prowling the sidelines with scowls and you know all this, you know, that to me, like, that's a stigma that has to be undressed a little bit and unpacked for this whole thing to evolve where we need it to go. And I really I like some of the coaches in the NBA right now are doing a phenomenal job. I think Steve Kerr, Monty Williams with the Phoenix Suns. Like, I think those guys do a great job of really showing what it's like to lead like that. And it's a different level, right, than college or high school, but it's still it's out there. So to your point, bring your own juice. What is that, right? Like that, I love it. It's in 2015. I think I made the change, the internal change to just be, because I had been on a coaching staff that I got fired, not let go. I had lived out of my car because we, you know, for 6 months trying to find a new job and basically was homeless. And you know what? That's the worst thing that ever happened to me. I still had a car. I could sleep in a gym on a beanbag at Power Man Fitness when I was trying to start a training organization. And I just started becoming more grateful for everything that I had. And everything that I once had as well. I mean, the housing market crashed. It went upside down in the house in 2011. So all these things, these life things happen to you and you don't know why.
Right.
But I became grateful for that experience in really looking back on it, reflecting it in 2015. I just said, no matter what happens to me, I'm going to make sure that I'm the most useful, energetic, over-positive, over-communicating individual that will try to transfer anything that I have in my being to you so that you can have a better day than you are probably having right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't ever want to be a vampire. I don't ever want to be a drainer. I just want to be an energy giver or a fountain. I just want to breathe life into people. Mm-hmm. And I just want to see where that takes me. Just being relentlessly positive, relentlessly optimistic, having intentional energy, because it's sometimes they say, well, how are you this way all the time? How are you? You wake up with the intentionality that I'm going to be this way. And if you're a sports psychologist, so you get it. All right. Positive self-talk doesn't necessarily correlate to better performance, but negative self-talk correlates to negative performance. So even if I'm being overly positive, I'm not necessarily changing the landscape of how it's going to go for me that day. But if I'm intentionally being that way, I know this, I'm not going the other way.
Right.
I'm not going in the downward spiral of negativity and the fear, doubt, and worry that happens when it creeps in. I might stay here, but what I can do is I can impact others around me. And maybe that can raise the level of the room. Maybe that can raise the energy in the room, because energy is transferable and we're all light beings, right? So we're transferring energy constantly. And whether that's to our actions, our vibe, you know, kids nowadays are like, oh, that's the vibe. You know, I'm a big protect the vibe guy, because I just want the vibe to be right. I want your energy.
That's around. Your next shirt. Protect the vibe.
Protect the vibe. PTV, protect the vibe. I love that. That's good. You heard it.
I'll
here
take
first.
10% of every. No, I'm kidding.
You could have it. I'll just donate to favorite charity. Yeah. But so 2015, when I was working at San Francisco with Rex Walters, I just said, they started calling me the juice man, because I was just always bringing the juice and I was always positive. And I was always trying to pick it up and help everybody just kind of have a more amped up type day. And it can be exhausting for people that don't like to be around really highly energetic individuals. But that's, once again, your choice on how you receive it.
That's right.
And so Bring Your Own Juice to me wasn't about, I need everybody to be overly outgoing and gregarious and this infectious style, you know, in your face type stuff. I need you to bring your own spirit. So really what Bring Your Own Juice is I need you to bring your own unique, authentic spirit to the party. Because we all have a unique gift about us. We all have a unique energy about us. And I think so many times we think we are victims of those around us. We let others' energy affect us. So then we become what we let affect us, right? And so if we're absorbing negative energy constantly, we're just going to become negative because it doesn't take any talent to be negative.
It's so easy.
It's easy to have a critical eye. It's easy to be a cynical. It's easy to be a cynicist. And so you have to be intentional about bringing your own spirit, bringing your own juice. People ask me, how do you get your own energy? How do you get your energy every day? I was, well, look, I don't, God's unlimited. So he gave it to me. God gives me this. If I don't use it, he's going to take it away. I know that's how it works. If we don't use the gifts that we were given, God will give them away to those who will use them. And so for me, I think my own, you know, Jerry Krause said, there's three rules you got to have in life. One, it's find your unique gift or talent. Two, develop your unique gift or talent. And three, give it away. Because what's Christmas without presents? And what's Christmas without presents if you don't give your dang presents away? So I can buy my kids all the presents in the world, but I keep them in the closet. That's pretty dang selfish. Right. So I'm going to give my gift away every single day, and that's going to be intentional. So Bring Your Own Juice really is bring your spirit. I need your spirit. Jenny, whatever yours is, whatever his is or hers is, I want that spirit to come. And I'm not trying to change you. I'm not trying to make you an extrovert. I'm not trying to make you an introvert. I just want you to understand that you have a spirit and a soul about you that's important. And we need it. We need your best. We were trying to call you up and not call you out, right? We want the best version of you. Mm-hmm. And it's just trying to get rid of the victim mentality of things are happening to me instead of happening for me.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about that, because there are, you know, coaches out there that, you know, they have to deal with those negative attitudes. There are players that are energy suckers. There are players that are draining. There are players can be either apathetic, or they can be negative, or they can second guess. And it's exhausting. How do you handle some of those attitudes that are bringing your team down? How do you get them on board with what you're trying to do?
This is a great question, because I think this is where the education piece comes in, which we fail a lot as coaches. Is because we can send them to you and you can talk about it and you can have sessions and you can unpack some things, but we fail to educate our student athletes on what's adaptive, what's maladaptive, what's task oriented, what's ego oriented. And we're talking about getting you to focus on the process and not the product. And where do all these fears and anxiety usually come from is just their product based versus task based, you know, what process based. And so it's educating them on your energy is bad today because we lost a game. And because we lost a game, you think that's how you value your worth, win or lose. Or we won the game, but you didn't score any points. So you value your worth on how good you were scoring points. So your energy is bad today. You have a negative attitude. It's all the ego. The ego is the enemy. It's a great book by Holiday, right? Like, it's all based on ego stuff. So what we have to do is we have to present them and educate them on this is ego oriented. Because the kids today, they're not dumb. That's the best part about it, is like, they have so much information. They almost have too much information. They don't know what's real or what's fake news, but they have enough to know. And they can kind of feel what's fake and what's real. So we just educate them on what's ego, right? And what's not. What's ego, what's process. And if we can get to the point of them learning that, we can hopefully educate them on how they can change their outlook. Because a lot of it is, like I said, it goes back to the victim mentality of, well, coach isn't going to like me today because I didn't score any points, or we didn't win, or coach won't like me, or this, this. And yeah. I've seen it a ton on players who just go with how the last outcome came. Mm-hmm. Was it good or bad? And there's so much in between that people don't realize. Like, we talk in our program about winning the one hour, the one class that you have, the one weight room session, the one practice, the one film session, the one tutor session you got, whatever, that you got to win that one. That's, and it's be where your feet are, right? But we can't. A lot of them can't, because when they're struggling, this is just my own version of this, but when a player is struggling, they don't focus on where their feet are and how they can fix right now, what they can do about right now. They go to their phone and they look at what just happened. What did I miss? And why they're not talking about me today, or what's going to happen. Oh, here's the future outlook of what's going to happen tomorrow when we play. What's going to happen? And we're never here. We're somewhere else in the multiverse, Dr. Strange. Okay. We're somewhere else in the multiverse. Yes. And they're always living two or three parallel universe, different timelines versus being in the timeline that's important, which is right here. And I don't have the answer for that one on how to get kids to quote unquote check in and stay locked right here. In the present, you know, play present, be present. Because it's a battle we're going to constantly have to fight as coaches or anybody for that matter, in any job or any profession. You can't, this thing's attached to them and it's usually attached right to their hand. So,
right. And I think the key is what you said earlier is you got to educate them. You got to educate them on using that tool for good and using that tool to be productive. And being able to develop a filter to know what serves them, what doesn't serve them, you know, what they have control of, what they don't have control of, being able to use that and develop a filter with them can be probably one of the best life coping skills that you can arm them with.
Psychological skills training, right? It's called training. You're training them. It's no different than someone with the military training. You're getting a training. You have to, before you can ever understand it, you have to be trained in it. And I think they did, like I said, Microwave Society, they read a book, they open up a thing, they say, I'm going to meditate, or I'm going to breathe, or I'm going to watch Wim Hof's breathing technique, and I'm going to become, you know, more relaxed, or I'm going to be able to release, you know, dopamine now because I'm breathing differently, or whatever, yeah. Cold water submersion, you know, all these things that people think can just fix it. And it takes training, mental training. I mean,
yeah, there's no magic wand. There's no pixie dust. That's only in the movies. It is a process. It's a journey. But the big key is to buy in and to be present and to be engaged. And I think that's a great point that you make. That's something that I think a lot of them, you know, that's the step that's very difficult because there's a lot to process and a lot to unpack, as you said, when you are present and when you really look at that self-awareness. But once you become self-aware, once you are able to do that and able to recognize what specific coping skills work for you, you're going to increase your self-confidence. You're going to increase your self-efficacy. Yes. There's going to be, you know, there's so much more that you can be doing when you get out of your own way.
Yes. And back to the juice side of it. I mean, to me, energy affects attitude, right? That's the way I look at it. It's like, my energy is good. I'm going to have a good attitude. Attitude ultimately affects outcome. So the process for me is having great energy and having a great attitude and knowing that I'm ultimately going to put forth the maximum effort that's required to be successful, right? Because this should just be go hand in hand, but energy, attitude, effort, outcome. And we can look at that in two ways. We can look at that as going upwards in a positive route, like good energy, good attitude, maximum effort, desired outcome.
Yeah, or we absolutely. Can go
bad energy, bad attitude, bad effort, bad outcome. I mean, it's pretty simple if I look at it in that sense. And I'm not a very smart human being. So I try to dumb things down to the lowest common denominator for myself, most importantly. But I try to take that scale every single day and knowing that you're not going to be perfect in it, but those are easily recognizable goals for me. So start the day with a great energy. And usually that's me just messing with my kids in the morning, going nuts. And that's my day off, right? And then start it because I have great energy. I'm going to have a great attitude today. I come in, always be chipper, always say hi, do my job. And then I'm going to put forth maximum effort to whatever task at hand that I got to complete today. And then because I'm doing that, I'm going to probably get the desired outcome that I want. And if we could break it down to that simple of an element, then I think we'd have a little bit of a recipe for success, more so than just letting the day happen to us.
So what, talk to some of the coaches out there on, because, you know, the coaches are criticized. They're criticized, right or wrong, or agree, disagree with whatever they're doing. It's just nature of the business. You can have the absolute best intentions. You can win by 30 points and someone's going to have something to say. How do you personally handle criticism? How do you handle that adversity and shield it, compartmentalize it, absorb it, embrace it? What do you do with that criticism and how do you turn it around?
Criticism, it's funny. It's a funny concept, right? Mm-hmm. Coach Meyer, my former college coach, God rest his soul. He was He's maniacal. I love him. He's the most detail-oriented man I've ever been a part of, ever met. He has so many quirks, right? And as a player, you never know what coaches go through because you're just a player. But then I became a GA, so I was able to be a graduate assistant for him. So I got to play for him and then coach with him. And it changed, man, the paradigm shift that I had, just understanding why he did what he did to us as players. It was remarkable because there is always a method to the madness. But I'll never forget this. And my first 2 years playing for him, we struggled. We didn't win a whole lot of games. And honestly, he had just taken over a program that went to the Division II Elite Eight, which is like the Final Four for Division One. So he walks into an environment where like we're expected to win. Expectations are high. You're taking over a really good squad. They just went to the Elite Eight. They're basically returning everybody. So why not do it again? But it's a different coach. It's a different method. Right? He's going to do it his way. So it's not what it was. It's completely changed. And we lost. And we lost guys, we lost players, they transferred in and out, and we lost for 2 years straight. And I was a true freshman when he came in. And so now I'm going into my junior year, and the expectations, you hear them, you hear the criticism going in the streets about your coach, and he's ruined, you know, Northern State, they're not going to be very good, yada, yada, yada. And what did he do? We were an Elite Eight team, and now we're nothing. We can't even win regular season games. And we win back-to-back championships, and then he wins basically three championships in a row and takes him back to the tournament. And it flipped like that. So when I came back to be a GA, I asked him what it was like going through those times, taking that criticism, people writing, you know, articles on him in the paper about this and this. The family's got to go through that, just like all coaches have to go through it at some point when they start criticizing at a high level. You know, people don't realize it. The fans don't realize it. But guess what? Our families read that stuff too. And it doesn't just affect you, it affects your entire family. And so that hurts. And Coach Meyer used to keep a manila folder, and on it, what did it say? It said something like, for your eyes later, or something like that. Some weird thing like criticism for your eyes later, or to keep you humble. And he pulls out this folder, and it's just chock full of every negative article ever written about him. In like a high functioning sociopathic type of way, he pulls out all the negative articles that were ever written about him by anybody that said like Coach Meyer can't coach and these guys were running the town, let's run him out of here, he should be fired, all the stuff. And he goes, I keep those as reminders that everybody's entitled to their opinion. He goes, because when we win championships, we get to keep those, and those are reminders that everybody's entitled to their opinion. And I'll never forget that. He said, you'll never win an argument with someone who writes, you have a pen and they have a barrel of ink. You're going to run out first. And so our opinions that we get as coaches that validates us, right, is when we get to win a championship or we have a successful season and we go to an NCAA tournament, we get to hang a banner, and that's our opinion. We did what we thought was right, and it worked. And anybody who writes is entitled to their opinion. And when we lose, you know what? We're losing, and they're probably right about what they're writing a lot of the times. Doesn't mean they understand the whole situation, but everybody's entitled to their opinion. And so from that lesson, I learned, one, I never want to keep a file folder full of things bad about me. I don't want that negativity, and I don't want to manifest that type of negative energy in my soul ever. But
that was brave.
That was brave. And I do understand, though, that you have to distort your competitive reality, especially when you're having losing seasons, to how you get your team to operate and still function at a high level. Sure. And you also have to destroy your competitive reality during winning seasons, because you don't want teams to get complacent and be the victim of success.
Right.
And so it is a constant battle between what's right and what's wrong, what you need in the moment, what you want right now, or what you need most. And so those things are, that's why this profession does it. The coaches need it. The players need it. We need support and psychological skills support. We need psychological skills training, because with so many different personalities, Jenny, of players, and each high school coach, college coach, you got 15 different players, 15 different personalities. You're going to have to learn about them, but some of them don't want you to learn about them. They won't be vulnerable enough to open up with you. So now you're going to coach them the way you feel like you should, but it could be completely backwards, because there's no communication on how you should coach that individual. And whose fault is that? Nobody's. It's a failure to communicate.
Right.
If the player doesn't meet the coach halfway and the coach doesn't meet the player, it's just a failure to communicate. But at the end of the day, a coach is in a position where he has to coach and he's got to do his job. So he's going to do what he feels or she feels needs to be done. And you may not, as a player, agree with that, but you never said anything. And so therein lies that, once again, one of the bigger issues that we have in a snapshot, in a 10,000 foot view of coaching right now in today's world, is kids will tell Twitter and Instagram how they feel, but they won't tell their coach, or they won't tell their mom or dad, or they won't tell anybody else. And so,
right. There's no syncing up to, they've got to be able to sync. What is it that you talked about how coaches need to be, supported, and it is overwhelming sometimes. I think, a lot of people don't realize the emotion and the energy and the effort that go into coaching. You are so invested in your athletes and you want the best for them and you want your program to be the best it can be, but it can be overwhelming. What do you do? What's your therapy? What's your release? Do you hike? Do you watch movies? Do you play with your kids? I'm sure your kids have something to do with it, but what do you do personally?
That's great. I'm an avid movie guy. So I'm a big movie junkie, and I haven't been to a movie theater since COVID hit, which is crazy enough. Yeah. So I love movies flat out. You could get me lost in 2 hours for a movie. I could feel like I was gone for a week. That's the type of release and outlet. Yeah. It's just who I am. Outside, I love to still shoot. I love shooting hoops. Never going to stop. Mm. I love just getting in the gym and just torching the nets. I mean, this is just nothing like just bouncing a ball in a quiet gym, in my opinion. It's where I fell in love with the game, and I'll always be in love with the game, is just in the quiet hours, the invisible hours where nobody can see you, just go in there and shoot. That is like therapeutic for me, just the bouncing and the swishing of the net, just the flicking of the wrist. I could do that all day long because it'll never leave you. It brings back so many memories and nostalgic, right? It's still counting 3-2-1s on shots. To me, that's another way of therapy. And family has been the biggest release for me. My wife's amazing. I mean, she's a behavioral specialist. And so I know she works with me on a daily basis. Right? So, and my kids, it's just like when you have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, I think this was another massive paradigm shift for me, was when you have kids, you become a better coach. And because you start looking at things like, what if that was your son or daughter? How would you want them to be coached? Right. How would you approach this situation if that was your son or daughter? And it doesn't mean we're going to get it right all the time, because every kid and every situation requires something different. But to me, that's also therapy, is just playing with those guys. And like, I might teach Grace, I might say something to Grace about her shot, or, she's kicking a soccer ball and she will not listen to me, right? So I'm just back off. I know, you probably don't want to be coached, but my son Skywalker, and my son's name is Skywalker. So my son Skywalker, he will take coaching and he loves it. Like, he's already a year and a half and he's like, yeah, let's do more, I could even boo him and he'd be like, yeah, boo me again, see what happens. I mean, he's just, they're wired differently. And it's just,
okay, well, we gotta go back and tell me what Skywalker, and I'd love to know where your name originated as well. Sundance.
I think my mom and dad were kind of visionaries. It's weird. I'm from Gillette, Wyoming. Sundance, Wyoming is about 45 minutes away.
Yeah.
But it's basically a traditional Catholic family where my mom and dad, my mom has like 6 brothers and sisters. My dad has 11. And they're all pretty, pretty boring names, like Tom, John, Dan, Al, Linda, Bob, Mary, Kevin, Trish, Barb, and so then my dad and mom, they're the firstborn son here, and they're thinking, like, what should we name our kid, right? And they somehow, through an epiphany, come up with the name Sundance. I don't think they told their parents what they were going to name me until I was born and I got to see him. And my grandpa was like, you named him what? What, your name is Sundance? It's going crazy. And so I grew up with a lot of nicknames, and sometimes you get teased about your name when you're young. You don't quite understand the power of your name. And growing up and getting older, I loved it. I loved every single thing. It was kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you want to get into psychological skills training. Like Sundance, the sun has great energy, and dancing is a great vibration. It's a great energy.
Yes, you are well-named.
Yes. So I told Courtney, I said, we're going to name our firstborn son Skywalker. And I thought she was going to veto that. And she loved it. She's like, we're doing it. And so if the sun can dance, the sky can walk. Yeah. And I'm also a big Star Wars guy. So that's
okay. There we go.
Because the force, right? The force, yes. Force with you, the force of life, the force of energy, all these things. To me, it's what makes the world go round. And there's an invisible energy all around us that hopefully my son will grow up with the name Skywalker and own it, kind of like I own my name. And
right.
Grace.
What is your daughter's name?
Daughter's name is Grace. By the grace of God, I was given a baby girl, and as a firstborn. And so I will always be grateful for Grace, because she's going to teach me so much in this world that I need to learn still.
Yes. Buckle up.
Yeah. And so like that's who I am. I mean, I love it. And this talk is very fruitful for me, because it's a constant reminder of how much we still don't do for our athletes. But it's also, I hope, for the athletes, it's a constant reminder of how much they don't do for themselves.
Right.
Because the stigma we talked about is, maybe I don't want to go in it. I don't want to see it. But you can't carry all this stuff. And this is the kind of the pet peeve here. You don't get to carry all this stuff and then constantly perform bad and go out there and have bad performances, or have bad practices, or stack bad days, and then try to blame somebody else or something else on the circumstance without doing the work yourself. Like, you got to go do the work. And whether that's physical work on the court or mental work with you or with a sports psychologist or with a friend or a family, whoever, or whether that's just spiritual work, you know, because you're not diving deeper into your faith, whatever that is, you still got to do the work.
Right.
And I think sometimes we look for, you know, what's that, microwave society and transfer portal society right now. If it's not going good, we leave. If it's going great, we'll stay. And that can change day to day. Mm-hmm. And that should never be the case. It's right. What are you convicted in? What do you believe in? And if you're not helping yourself, how can we give you the resources to help you? But once we give you the resources, if you don't do anything with those student athletes, this is a direct call to you. If you don't do anything with those resources, then it's going to be a vicious cycle. It's just going to be a vicious, never ending cycle.
Right. Yeah. Eat while your food's hot, you know, eat while your food's hot. Well, we always end the show with a technique and kind of a couple of things that athletes can do in the moment. Do you have a technique that either you used as a player or that you encourage coaches, whether it's listening to music or a breathing technique or, I don't know, dancing before the games, whatever. Do you have a certain technique?
I still love to read. I like to read, and I like to journal. So more importantly, I think my meditation is journaling. I'm not a very sit still type of individual. It's hard for me.
Yeah.
But I have two things that I love to do more than anything. I love to journal. Mm-hmm. I love to write, constantly writing. If I told my wife, I said, if I ever die, just get this, make sure she gets this thing right here. Because that's where all the golden nuggets are. All the late night can't sleeps, early morning rise ups.
All the t-shirt ideas.
All the protect the vibe ideas are in the journal. And that was Don Meyer, my college coach, taught me the importance of taking notes. As one of his rules is, everybody takes notes. Everybody says, please and thank you. Yes or no, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. All right, those are two massive, and everybody picks up trash.
Yeah.
And those are his three rules. And so the everybody take notes side of it is, I have 1,000 journals when I die, and I'll look like probably, you know, a beautiful mind, and nobody will understand any of them.
But what a treasure that you could be leaving for your children to explore, or your grandchildren to explore. I mean, what a treasure that you're leaving behind. I think that's fantastic. Well,
can I give you the second one?
Yeah.
The second one was, I listened to a podcast with Robin Sharma on it. I love Robin Sharma. He writes great fables. The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, the 5 a.m. Club. I love Robin Sharma. And he talked about people who struggle with meditation because they can't sit still. They think meditation is about sitting, you know, like this and
emptying
the mind and being able to sit in just straight peace and silence for 15 to 30 minutes. And most of us can't do that. And he said, the technique that I would prefer, if you don't want to go to counseling, if you don't want to seek therapy, is just sit there with your thoughts. He goes, the best therapy you can do is let all those thoughts that come to the front of your mind, prefrontal cortex, just let them all come up. And just like flashcards, or just like a slideshow, we're going to stop here. Here's a memory. Here's a moment. Just let it stay there. Think about it. And don't try to analyze it. Don't try to psychoanalyze it. Just Let it be for what it is, because it's usually probably a past memory or it could be a future worry, but let it sit there. Eventually it'll go away and the next one will flash up, and let it sit there and just let it be. And it brings me back to the point that we are all human beings, not human doings. Mm-hmm. And so our goal is to be, just be. That helps us be present, right? Be in the moment, be where your feet are, be a human being, and stop trying to be a human doing so much. Because if we're always doing, we're never being. We're never being us. We're never being where we should be. And to me, like, that was very powerful to just let that be, whatever that thought was. If I'm trying to sit and breathe and just relax before a game, I'm not going to stop these thoughts from creeping in my mind. I'm not going to try to compartmentalize them or stick them back here in the subconscious. I'm going to let that thought come up. And he said, over the course of 30 days, if you do it for 30 days, eventually that's no longer going to pop up there. Why? Because you gave it what needed. You gave it the requisite time it needed to show itself, maybe heal, whatever, and disappear. But you're going to keep having those things come. And then maybe over the course of years, because just like anything, it's training. Over the course of years, you may get to a point where all that stuff, you can sit in peace. And there's not a thought that you need to have in your mind, because you've already let them all go and you've already let them play. You don't need to press rewind anymore.
Yeah, that's an amazing amount of discipline, but a very powerful technique. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that. I appreciate all this. I think I could continue talking to you for hours and hours on this topic.
I told you we could deep dive this. We could deep dive this.
I know, right? And I'd love to have you back on sometime and we can continue talking. I mean, you mentioned transfer portal. There is a whole psychological show right there. But well, I want to thank you so much for your time and what you're doing and wish you the absolute best with the rest of your season and your continued endeavors in this great sport. And you're doing a tremendous job. You coach people. You don't just coach players. And I thank you for that.
Well, thank you for this platform, because this is it's extremely important. It can be extremely impactful if we get the right momentum with this stuff. And to me, like, that's the part is we have to get some momentum with this, with other coaches who can get on a pulpit and talk about it and be advocates for mental health and psychological skills training. So more so than just the mental health side of it, but the psychological skills training side of it. That is my big advocacy, is the education, the implementation, the awareness of what you need. Like you talked about the toolboxes. Right. So Jenny, I think you could really make this massive and extremely important, extremely invaluable for anybody who's locking into this or going forward with this. So thank you.
No, thank you for being here. I appreciate it. And again, wish you the best of luck. Coach Sundance Wicks, thanks for joining us. My thanks to Coach Sundance Wicks. What an energetic coach. And I know that players around him are impacted by that contagious energy. So we thank him for his time and his insights as we dove into mental coaching with Coach Sundance Wicks. So, you know, one of the things that I want to talk about as we close this podcast out is I want to revisit. I thank you for a lot of the questions that you've sent in about the technique we talked about in our first episode of visualization. We can expand a little bit on that. Visualization, there are two main types that I feel like are most beneficial for a lot of athletes. There's a progressive visualization, as an athlete can watch themselves go through the progression of a game. It can go through different skills. You can see yourself dribbling. You can see yourself passing. You can see yourself then catching and shooting. You can see yourself rebounding. And you go through a progression of skills. Then there's repetitive visualization. And that repetitive visualization is, I'm going to watch myself blocking out, getting position, jumping up, going to the basketball, getting a commanding rebound as I protect the basketball, as I pivot and make a strong outlet pass. And you watch that same progression over and over and over. Both of these are very strong. There are a lot of ways to visualize, and you have to find your way to personalize them. But those two guidelines can kind of get you started on this technique. I also suggest doing it to music. Music is very powerful, and being able to do these skills with your mind's eye, as you are watching yourself, it's like you're watching yourself on film, or you're sitting on the sideline and watching yourself with perfect technique, on-point technique. That is so important. And if you can do these skills to the beat of music, of a song that motivates you, this can calm you. It can get you focused before games and before performance. Visualization is a great preparation tool, and it is definitely one of my favorites. And we will dive into that a little bit later in some other episodes, as we are going to do some visualization sessions on this podcast. So stay tuned for that. But I'm going to leave you with this quote. I'm going to leave you with this quote from John Wooden himself. "You are in the presence of a true competitor when you observe that he or she is indeed getting the most joy out of the most difficult circumstance. The real competitors love a tough situation. That is when they focus better and function better, their competitive greatness." Coach John Wooden. And I tell you, I think there's a lot of truth into that statement. Sometimes we shy away from tough situations. We're too anxious to face them. But what if we leaned into them? Those competitive feelings that you have oftentimes can help take over and help you get through those situations where you can thrive and meet your highest potential. Thank you for joining us for our podcast. This has been Mental Coaching. I'm your host, Jenny Hopkins, and it is sponsored by the National High School Basketball Coaches Association. And until next time, keep swinging, keep fighting, and make yourself better each and every day.